Welcome to the Inclusive Leader Spotlight, a podcast that showcases leaders who are making a positive impact in the workplace by leveraging diversity, equity, and inclusion. I am your host, Juan Taveras, founder and CEO of DEI ProFinder. Our business is dedicated to fostering connections between business leaders and right-fit DEI professionals. We are on a mission to demystify diversity, equity, and inclusion, and we're doing it one conversation at a time. We believe that DEI is not only a moral and social obligation, but also a business imperative that can create positive and engaging workplaces, boost productivity, and drive innovation. Join us as we explore the power of DEI and its potential to transform the workplace and society at large. Welcome to another episode of the Inclusive Leaders Spotlight. Today, we are joined by Dr. Jen O'Ryan, founder and CEO of Double Tall Consulting. Dr. Jen is an organizational strategist, author, speaker, and change agent. She believes in the impact and benefits that human-focused change can have on individuals and organizations. Through her consulting work, she helps clients shift their inclusion and diversity initiatives from good intentions to effective, measurable, safe, and meaningful results. Wouldn't we all want that? Welcome, Dr. Jen, to our show. So
thank
happy
you
to have
so much
you.
For having me.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. So we're going to talk today, as you know, the purpose of our podcast is to demystify diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we're doing it one conversation at a time. So that's why I'm excited to have you on our show today, because we've had a couple of conversations now, one-on-one, and I know we're going to have a very rich and engaging another one today. So we'll talk about your experience with diversity, equity, and inclusion, specifically what you do in your work, in your consulting work with clients, and your unique approach to this work, some of the successes you've had and some of the challenges you've faced. So, but before we dive into all of that fun stuff, I know our audience is eager to know, who are you and what do you do?
That is such a great question. So I help organizations and the individuals within those organizations really get better at inclusion, diversity, representation, and belonging. And that means different things to different people. And so that's why I have a very customized approach. I originally came up in tech. So the first 20-ish years of my career was navigating change and launching new experiences and systems in large and small organizations. Mm. And the reason that I lead with that is because there's so much nuance to taking these good ideas or these initiatives and actually getting them to see the light of day, and then also have people adopt them. And it's there's a lot of different challenges and things that you need to think about and, you know, be able to respond and react and correct for. And so that's a similar approach that I take to the DEI work that I do. Is making sure that we have thought about everything and roll it out in a way that humans can really adapt and they can come along on the journey.
Mm. I love that. Yeah. Thank you so much for that introduction. There's so much there. One of the things as you were talking that came to mind for me is this idea, and I can't remember now where I heard it, but don't give me credit for it. It's something I heard somewhere. That organizations don't change, people do. Right. So if you want change to stick, any kind of change, but today we're going to be talking specifically about diversity, equity, and inclusion programming, you need to focus on the people. So can you tell us a little bit more about that process when you engage with clients? What does that look like?
Yeah. Yeah. And that statement is true for positive and negative change. Mm. So if you see formerly healthy organizations slowly go into this more toxic, got this insidious kind of behaviors and things going into place, and they can change in that way as well. But I like to focus on what's possible. Mm. And bringing people into that positive change. And it really is those organizations tend to focus on the external facing, the big changes. Mm-hmm. And how they're perceived, how they're reflected. But it's those little daily micro experiential blips that typically don't make it up to the leadership level or any other kind of visibility, or really it's difficult to measure those, but that's where the change happens. And that's where the lived experience of the employee and that sense of belonging and that sense of inclusivity really comes to bear. It exists or it doesn't exist in those experiences.
Oh yeah, I completely agree. Those micro behaviors and activities, right, that are oftentimes not, unfortunately, not part of the DEI initiatives. Like to your point, a lot of organizations prefer, maybe because it's easier, I don't know, but prefer to focus on what is more visible, right, externally. So diversity metrics and mission statements and all these other kinds of things that we see out there, but they often neglect to do that internal work,
Yeah,
right, with the individual.
exactly. And that's what I typically coach people on. These I lovingly refer to them as accidental experts, because oftentimes we come into this in a very accidental way. We just either are really, really good at getting things done, or we have this calling or passion or desire to make the world a little bit better, even if that's just a tiny part of our organization or workplace. And the thing is that change is possible from people just wanting to do it, but they need to know how to do it. It's such a delicate balance. And I typically coach that projects are projects, but DEI is very different. And I do tend to use DEI in kind of for lack of a better word, generic term, because I really mean all the elements of the deep equity and justice and inclusion, belonging, representation, all of those things. But for the sake of conversation, I'm putting them in this container. DEI is different. It just simply is. It can bring up a lot of emotionally charged conversations. Some of the terms tend to be more loaded, and people have an idea of what it means when that's not what the intention of the organization is. And it really can be sensitive to even broach the subject without getting a reaction. I mean, if I can take like 2 minutes, this example encapsulates so much of the work
Please.
that I encounter, and really the challenge that a lot of people in human resources and people operations encounter. I was sending out an agreement for a new group that was coming together. So they were coming together from three different groups, merging together on a shared initiative, shared goal. And part of what we were doing is saying, okay, this is how we're going to interact. These are the core hours that we're going to engage. These are the best channels. This channel rather than email if it's urgent, and just basic how we're going to operate together more effectively. And we got to the part around inclusive language. And I said, we should at least have some element in there, not prescriptive, but just an element and understanding that we're going to assume good intentions. We will have, inclusive language in our documents and design. And that just blew up the conversation. And the reason that I bring that up is that it's not to point fingers or say, oh, this work is so hard. It is hard. But everybody on the team was fine organizing their work styles, when they would be available, when they would be offline, how they would communicate, all these other aspects. But the mere mention of we should also design this for an inclusive language or inclusive future-proofing brought up all these other things for them. We worked through it, but to me, that's interesting that everybody is like, well, let me tell you when I'm going to have lunch. Don't tell me which words that I should and shouldn't use. That feels way more personal and intimate and challenging for them.
Wow. Thank you for that, because that those kinds of examples, help to better understand what it is that we're talking about here. Because you're right, the DEI work is challenging, and it often presents itself, those challenges do, as roadblocks in just basic project management. Like, so I love that example, that it's like everything was chugging along until this idea came. So what was it about the idea of using inclusive language that, for lack of a better word, sort of triggered some folks and derailed a little bit of that progress? So you have to take time to, and thank you for that, because that's often, and this is where I see some of the a lot of the challenges with our DEI work, is that you hit a hurdle, and then the reaction is like, okay, we can't do that. We have to either stop or avoid it completely. But instead, it sounds like you helped the group lean into it a little bit. Do you mind sharing a little bit more about the outcome there?
Yeah, no, and that's one of the reasons why I do make this like projects or projects, because you are going to run into those encounters, but it can be really surprising. And so that's why, for DEI practitioners and these accidental experts, and the change agents, just knowing that this is something that you could encounter and having a plan to be able to work around it. Oftentimes what it is people feel like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Like they're either, oh, now I'm going to be told everything I've been doing my whole life is wrong. All my words are wrong. I have to learn to all do all these new things. And on top of a day job and on top of a project that's already kicking off, that can be overwhelming for people. Yeah. And that is typically what's coming up is now I've got another thing I have to think about. That said, there are some individuals who feel like I'm going to be relegated to the sidelines. I'm not going to be able to say anything. I'm going to have to watch everything. Why are people so sensitive? Which is an entirely different conversation that we will have with the team. But then honestly, some people just have never had to think about it.
Yep.
And so you will see these people react very differently where they're just like, I'm fine with whatever. I just didn't know that this was a consideration.
Yeah.
And you have ways to work through it. I mean, being able to talk about it without shutting anybody down is.
I mean, that's it, right? I think the solution is often so as simple as that. It's emotionally charged and challenging, but it's as simple as just continuing the conversation, like pushing through some of that discomfort so that we can start to exchange perspectives and ideas. When I started doing this work, I remember, and I'll just be very vulnerable here. I had a personal fear as an HR leader in facilitating those conversations because I didn't feel like I could, who am I to tell someone what they should and shouldn't be thinking. But that's not what this is about. It's not about changing hearts or, well, we're trying to bring people into a conversation, not tell people what they should be thinking. Right. And that's so I love this example that it was the foundation of the work was around this project. Right. So we all have this shared mission and we sort of know where we're trying to go and what we're trying to achieve. And then how do you, the DEI components of that naturally, sort of ruffle, you know, brought up some things that needed to be addressed. So I appreciate that's what prompted those deeper conversations and seeking understanding, because that's really where I think a lot of the magic is.
Yeah.
You used it. Oh, go ahead, Dr.
I was going to say, you brought up such a good term though. It's not about changing anyone's belief systems. Mm-hmm. We're not here. This is about a healthy workplace. This is about productivity, team cohesion, but you're right. We're not here to shame anybody or change their belief systems.
Gosh,
this
no.
is bringing people in and building a bigger stage.
Yeah. I love that. You mentioned a term that I really like, accidental expert, because I see that a lot. I think there's so many folks that do this work that are called to it or attracted to it because of a personal experience. So I wonder if that is also the case for you. So like what ignited your initial passion or interest for diversity, equity, and inclusion?
For me, it came from the operational optimization work that I was doing. So when you look at a design flow, you can start to see, even like with traffic, you can start to see where things bog up, mm-hmm. right? Things bottle down. And it slows things down. And to me, it's like, well, that's inefficient. That's waste. And that goes against me. So it's like, how do we make this more effective? And translating that to human interactions in the workplace, if it's not inclusive, if it's not a healthy work environment, if it's not bringing people up, then we lose productivity. People feel, I mean, you can feel the energy kind of sink a little bit. And if people can't be there themselves, if they can't authentically show up and contribute and thrive, then you're losing things. And it's waste. I mean, think about the compartmentalization of having to hide part of who you are. If all that creative energy could go into effective problem solving and your work and building things, phenomenal. We get all the innovation. If you feel like you have to, you know, tamper down who you are or diminish yourself, you lose that spark. You lose that creativity.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that because when you're doing that, you're coming from a state of preservation, right? You're constantly measuring risk. You know, what is the best thing for me to say right now, or how much can I share without getting too vulnerable. And all of this, that takes up brain space, to your point. So if our brain space is consumed with trying to navigate just simple conversations in our day-to-day work, then there's no way we have capacity to think about innovation or think creatively about problem solving. I had, as you were describing this, the design process and workflow, and using that as data points, I could visualize it. I've been in projects where we know where the bottlenecks are. And how often, I don't want to make an assumption here, but I'm wondering from your experience, how often are those bottlenecks, how often do they point to either an individual or a relationship, some kind of dynamic, right? That, where that bottleneck is living. Does it often point to an individual, or is it more often like just a workflow process?
Sometimes it is a system flow. Sometimes it's a system flow where the infrastructure just grew around something that was antiquated. Especially we see that a lot with companies and organizations that grow overnight, for lack of a better word. They just grow so quickly and they keep things in place and everybody just gets used to this blockage. So they know how to work around it. And then it just becomes part of the culture to work around it rather than fix it.
Gotcha.
And stopping the work that's going through takes longer and seems more difficult than just, you know, fixing it. But oftentimes it goes back to a team that for whatever reason isn't brought in on the conversation. Sometimes it's a history of a specific team being ignored or a specific person being ignored, and they just kind of build up that cynicism.
Yeah.
And that builds into resentment. And then it's just like, why should I help you? Because the last three times I helped you, you didn't listen to what I said. And then it's kind of we're overrode. And so a lot of times you can trace it back to this human response to how we're treated and how we're interacted with. And you must see that all the time in when you're rolling out new policies. Right. I mean, people have that preconceived notion of what it means when they see an email from HR saying we have good news about your insurance. Like, probably not good news for me. And it's that kind of cynicism builds in. And so sometimes it is really helpful to have an objective third party come in and help them peel back what is the reality of the system and what is this human element that's been baked into it that is making things more complicated.
There's so much there.
Even just a fear of change, a fear of doing it wrong. If you're doing it wrong and making a mistake on a very public forum is huge. And that can really make it scary. And that goes back to the psychological safe and trusted environment. If you have that, it's easier to take risks because you know the risk reward conversation you mentioned is going to be an easier one to have.
Yeah. And you know, people have your back if I love that you brought that up, because the whole time I'm thinking like there's a, for me, from my perspective, there's a, the common thread here is a lack of trust, right? And feeling safe. I'm just fascinated by this idea of, you know, because oftentimes it's so hard to get into the people side of this work, right? So the emotions and the perceptions and the different perspectives on what this is. But looking at like really raw data, if you will, objective data is what I'm saying, with project workflow, your design process, like that can be so rich in helping you identify where the issues are. And if it's dynamics that have existed for a while that are now sort of embedded in your process because it hasn't been addressed, or it's an individual that doesn't trust other people. Like this is one that I've seen. This is sort of the example that popped into my mind where in a workflow, if there's a bottleneck and it's one individual or a team even, that they're holding on to this piece of the work. They don't want to delegate it. They don't want to let it go. They're slow to make decisions because of this lack of trust and afraid of doing it wrong. So it takes them longer, but to your point, it impacts the rest of the project, or you've got folks figuring out how to work around this individual or this team. So then your whole system is at risk. So much good stuff there, because that can be oftentimes when I have HR leaders or business leaders that approach me to get support with developing DEI strategies, I ask about the data, like, what have you looked at? What are you, where are the pain points? And if they don't have it, because, oh, we haven't surveyed our staff and we don't, you know, we haven't done any focus groups or anything like that. And I was like, that's fine. But where there's plenty of data that you can look at now that I'm sure you have in your workflow system or your CRM or somewhere, even your HRIS, that can give you some useful information just to get started, just to see where some of those issues are. And we can unpack that a little bit and see what is really needed. Because otherwise, yeah, go ahead.
And you bring up such a good point with the survey, because oftentimes when they do a survey, it'll be that 1 to 5 strongly agree to strongly disagree.
Yeah.
And that's needed. That measures a lot of different things. But if there isn't the time taken to really understand what the sentiments are, like give the individual space to really tell you how things are going rather than strongly agree, strongly disagree. That's where the good stuff really comes in as far as what's really happening with the team is asking those questions. Yeah.
Yeah. So good. Okay. So we've talked a little bit about your process and how you engage with clients, but I'm curious about your unique approach to this work, because this is, I know that it is very unique and I'm sort of fascinated by how you approach DEI and bringing together your expertise in the tech space and then your communication experience. So how does that all come together when you're working with clients?
It can be an interesting journey. So, and the reason I say that is oftentimes when I show up at the doorstep, they're looking at it like, okay, we need to get better at this thing, this kind of amalgam thing. And the concern is that how do we do this and keep moving the business forward? Because there is this trepidation, this hesitation that, okay, while we're talking about these cool things that we need to do, and we're all humans, we all want to, you know, do good things. What's the ROI? How does this translate to the business side and the revenue side, which is the reason that we're in business to begin with?
Yeah.
And this feeling that we're going to get stuck talking about our feelings and talking about all the cool things that we could do and not actually do the thing. And so it's definitely not an academic exercise. And so what I do is I lay out that this curve of change, right?
Mm-hmm.
That this is the high level of the human response and relationship to change, and outline to them what it typically looks like. And giving them that kind of sense of this is a trajectory that we're on and we will get over it, we'll get through it, we'll process it.
Yep.
And this is how the work gets done alongside. It's not like everything's going to completely shut down while we do this. But if we don't have an idea of how we're going to get there and how we're going to bring people along and have the understanding of what's going to get in the way, potentially, we're going to have the same conversation 18 months from now and 3 years from now and 5 years from now, except it'll be a different group of people and we'll have interesting technology.
Yeah. Slightly different hurdles, but it'll be the same.
It will be having the same conversation.
Yeah.
Fascinating. And then just allowing them space to get real about what is holding you back.
Mm.
What is the story that the organization is telling themselves that they can't get through this?
I love that. You mentioned something there that is often a myth, for lack of a better word, about this work, right? That it is often perceived as so big and important that you can't do it while also running your business, right? It's sort of like this, we have to stop everything in order to address this so that we can run our business better, which I understand somewhat. But to your point, I think it's more about acknowledging that this is a process, right? This is a journey. And that change curve that you mentioned it looks different for every organization, depending on where the individuals there are and how big the organization is and how, we're talking about a change process from the human emotional and psychological perspective, but there's also systems and processes that need to change, and that takes time. And anyway, so that is a myth that I like to address when I'm working with clients. It's, this is not a one and done kind of situation. This is a long-term process. And it looks different for everybody. And I think going back to something you mentioned earlier, that just the power of having a neutral third party be able to look at that process and to look at your data from an objective point of view. Because sometimes internally, and I've been there as an HR leader, we're too close to it. We don't see everything, or because we are now embedded in this culture, there are things that we even become blind to, you know? So, thank you for sharing that a bit more about your process.
Yeah. And I used to, when I was coming up in tech, I used to work with the engineering team, and sometimes they would get a little frustrated with me because I would bring this, the data and the solution, and they would say, well, yeah, that would be great, but it's going to take really long. And I'm like, okay, but what can we do in 30 days? Like, don't tell me we can't do anything in 30 days. It's like, what can we do in 10 days? What can we do right now? Yeah. And so that's what I work through clients with, because I might have this area of expertise in executing and implementation and, you know, human behavior and organizational behavior, but they're the expert in their organization mm-hmm. and their workflow. And they're going to know what words will resonate and what is possible from that perspective. And so that we come to this thing, it's like, what can we start doing today? What's the goal in 30 days? And as you start to accomplish those things, even though they seem very small, they're still meaningful. And it shows people what's possible. And it starts to bring some of the cynicism down and people become more engaged.
Oh, that's so powerful, because you're demonstrating progress, to your point. As small as it is, we're still moving forward in the direction that we're trying to head. And it also, like I said earlier, this oftentimes this DEI work can feel so big and ambiguous. But when you break it down into smaller chunks or smaller steps, and even down to the team level, like, what can this team do in today or the next week or the next 30 days realistically, right? Because we all have full-time jobs and we have to keep doing that. So realistically, what can we accomplish? And then as those small pieces start to come together, you know, a year from now, where will you be? So beautiful. Thank you for that. All right, I have a question about the kinds of outcomes your clients typically experience when they work with you, because I know you do, and we've heard here today just how broad your expertise is, right? So you approach this work from many different in many different ways depending on the needs of the client. But let's talk now about the outcomes. What are some of those things that folks can expect?
Yeah, and this is going to go back to that kind of feeling very ambiguous, but it feels different. Going to work feels different. And I've heard that in multiple and different industries and different engagement types, where it's like, it feels different. Our meetings are different now. And it's like, that goes back to capturing sentiments, because that change, if it's different, you kind of lose the power of that if you aren't having a baseline. And then, okay, 6 weeks later, what does it feel like? Yeah. But honestly, the biggest one, the most impactful, and I think it's because it's more tangible, is when I'm doing a content review, and I will go through and, you know, like, smooth out somebody's new employee onboarding process, or I will take their content and get rid of some of the bias and stereotypes that's steeped in it. This is really effective also with, I know it's the first of the year, still kind of, employee training, anti-harassment, respect in the workplace. Some of those are they're problematic. And so going through and changing those and bringing them back to the team who was selecting it or designing it and showing them, this is what it could be. Like, this is what good looks like. It changes how they talk about their work. It changes how they challenge each other in meetings. It changes how leadership is talking about things in the hallway. And once you see that, once you experience that, you can't unexperience. You notice it everywhere. I'm trying to get away from, once you see it, you can't unsee it. Once you experience, you will notice it more frequently. It's a little doughy. I'll work on that. But that's the thing. It's like, it goes out into the community. Mm-hmm. It goes out into, you know, who they are as a person in the world, and they'll start to notice these things everywhere. And that shift in perception is one of the biggest, difficult to measure, but one of the most impactful outcomes.
That's beautiful.
And also, you know, attrition, abandonment rates go down, because if I can find something in their flow that has an outdated or exclusionary term, especially around gender and things like that, their abandonment rates will go down. Because we can find the point at which they're losing people, make a relatively easy systems change, and that's not there anymore. Now we're bringing people in.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And that's, so you've described both sort of concrete or tangible data points, right? So attrition and abandonment rate and those kinds of things. But the other stuff, the squishier stuff that you were describing, sounds, what I hear is the feeling of belonging, right? It's sort of, that's what you experience when everything in your organization is structured in a way to make, to pull you in and not to exclude you, right? So that's beautiful. So that's awesome. And I think you mentioned it earlier, but measuring, continuing to measure sentiment, right? Employee sentiment throughout, that is also a very important data point. It's still,
Oh, no, you go sorry. Ahead. Go ahead. This is not to say that it's all going to be all sunshine and roses. Like,
right, right.
Some of the best 16-hour days I've had have been working with these teams, because that work is still there. That pressure is still there. We still have to deliver. We still have to have all of those awkward conversations. We have to sit with all of those awkward pauses and have that healthy level of tension and conflict. So this is not just going to be great.
Yeah.
But it will be healthy. And that's different, because we've all had those experiences where we get an email from somebody on the team and we're just like, we shrink. The energy is like, I don't know if I can even look at this email right now. I may need to brace myself. That will never completely go away. But isn't it easier to deal with that and process it if you're operating in a safe and trusted environment?
I love that. And if you're grounded as a team on shared values and understanding, and that's powerful. And I've been there. That the stomach sinking feeling of an email coming through. I would love to avoid that at all costs. Okay, so as we wrap up our episode here today, Dr. Jen, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you. So here's what I'm hearing. You, partnering with you, not only do you get someone with a lot of experience facilitating human-centered design and processes and systems, but you also have the ability to sit with the discomfort and help teams navigate those challenges so that they don't become obstacles, right? And then they push through, not push, but they get through that together. So they see the other side of change and they start to experience progress, maybe small at first, but it's incremental and it builds on itself. And then you start to experience these awesome results of the feeling of belonging, conversations actually happening, conflict being resolved, right? It's not always going to be it's not a switch, right? Like, oh, now we have this, so everything is good from now on. We are human, and things are going to bubble up. New challenges maybe will need to be faced, right? But you'll have this new set of skills and these beautifully designed systems and processes that make that a little bit easier to manage, so that you have those business results. Because I love that you kept bringing that back to how is this positively impacting the business, and the data is there, right? That we really, you get more innovation, you get more engagement, fewer attrition and headcount, all the things. So all of that is there. So what a wonderful a thing to have as a business owner. So if you are an HR or business leader looking for support in this space, Dr. Jen, how can someone connect with you offline?
Oh, to learn more about my work, the website is Paging Dr. Jen. Email Jen at Paging Dr. Jen. And there are a ton of resources out there that are available for individuals. It's not just all about the work, but things to think about and consider. And it changes hard, and the discomfort that comes with change is our brain's best tool to keep us from doing anything that causes a lot of effort. So discomfort is actually, can be a good thing. But yes, I also am out on LinkedIn, and happy to connect. If anybody has questions, wants to have a conversation, I would love to be a resource.
Beautiful. Thank you. And I'll make sure to have links in the show notes for all of, so your website, your LinkedIn profile, and your email. So folks can get in touch with you. But it was such a pleasure to have you on our show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. I can't even believe it's the time has gone by so quickly. I could geek out with you on this and talk about it for an entire day.
I know. We have to have you back. That's for sure.
Yes. And then we have to get the business moving forward. So we can't talk about this all day. We got to go do the thing. Let's go change the world right now.
That's true. All right. Well, have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Inclusive Leader Spotlight. We hope that you're walking away with a better understanding of DEI and how you can bring it to life in your organization. If you are an inclusive senior level business leader who would like to be on this program, please visit DEIProfinder.com and click on the podcast tab to apply to be a guest. Also, if you know someone that would be a great guest, please send them to our website. If you enjoyed today's episode, would you consider sharing it on social media? You can find us by searching DEI Profinder on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and X. Include the hashtag Inclusive Leader Spotlight, and we'll make sure to show you some love. We are regularly putting on new episodes and content, so to make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe to our show on your favorite podcast listening app. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Thank you again for listening and for your support of our mission to demystify diversity, equity, and inclusion. Together, we are exploring the power of DEI and its potential to transform the workplace and society at large. Until next time.